John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And joining us is Sean Salisbury for some Four Downs. But of course, I don't know, Sean. I mean, I've been covering this league almost five decades. And yesterday, without doubt, was the strangest cut, the strangest day for training camp reporting. You know, roughly 29 players opting out over the course of the last 3 days for the season. I mean, you had the COVID test, which you expected. I mean, six members of the New England Patriots opting out for the season. It's like, I don't think I've ever seen anything like it.
No, John, we probably won't. As long as you've been covering it, for you to say something like that, who's covered it as well as anybody, and for five decades, like you said, it is going to be, you will, it'd be five more decades. And if you're 120, then maybe you'll see it again, but we're not going to see this again. And I'm with you. It was odd. And I don't think we're done with that, John.
No.
Let's hope it's not because somebody has to leave because of COVID, but you and I both know that there will be more guys who decide, and also with their eye to, well, what's going to happen in baseball? Will the Marlins start back up? Is another team going to be affected? You know, the bubble seems to be going well for the NBA, but they'll start to have an eye towards, you know, not only our country but other sports to see if, man, is this worth it? Or if somebody all of a sudden gets pregnant or their wife gets pregnant in the next, you know, all those things that come into play throughout the training camp and when it starts. But it won't be the last one, and it was, John. It was odd. We're sitting here getting excited normally about, oh, football starts, and now we've got this crazy thing we can't see, but everybody knows is there with COVID and player. I don't blame the players. I know that some, and I'd also don't blame the guys for wanting to play and for us playing. I see both sides of it, but it's not going to stop there. There will be others. The key is when, what happens if four or five superstars do it? Does that affect it like maybe it would the NBA, or is football big enough to overcome that? And then the difficulty starts of how you keep it away from the league and to keep the league going in the fall.
Yeah, but it was just strange because, I mean, every time you look up.
Very odd.
Yeah, yep. I mean, and I think some teams were caught by surprise. Now, my guess, my read on it, what I hear from New England is that Bill Belichick went to his guys and said, hey, listen, if any of you guys are thinking of opting out, let me know early. And so that's why he found out that six, and he was going to be okay on it, which is kind of strange because it's going to possibly cost him a chance to go to the playoffs. You know, when you lose four out of six starters, but that was very unusual. But let's get usual.
Yeah. And,
oh, go ahead.
Yeah. Go ahead. I was going to say, John, real quick, Belichick, as typical, probably out in front of it to prepare his team for the best way to deal with it if it does happen or if guys opt out.
No doubt. Well, let's get going with Four Downs.
Had a few days to process the Jamal Adams trade, so at face value, which team do you think came out ahead in the Adams deal?
You know, I've thought a lot about this. I don't think, and this isn't fence-sitting, I think for a safety, they gave up a lot, which down here in Houston makes people, you know, he was voted a top 10 player by the Players NFL Network in DeAndre Hopkins, and you got a second-round pick and a couple of other guys for DeAndre Hopkins. So, and David Johnson basically being one of them. So that irritated a lot of people in Houston after they saw Jamal Adams, two number ones and a three. At first I thought, man, the Jets blew this trade away as good as Jamal Adams is. And I stepped back and thought about it. I think a lot of it has to do with Kenny Norton and the defense and the way they use Jamal Adams. If you decide to put him as a half-field safety and play, keep him away from the line of scrimmage and play basic and soft, and Kenny Norton's a zone guy for the most part, then you're not going to utilize Jamal Adams to the fullest, and you're still going to have to pay him because now you have to, just like the Texans had to pay Laremy Tunsil, when you trade that much, it can't be a rental. So he will be the highest paid player in football, I mean, as the highest paid safety ever at the end of this season. So with that in mind, but then I thought if you utilize him right, he's a, you know, box safety, and you can put him in blitzes and doing all those things because he's really good in the backfield. This is what Seattle does, and they're not going to be a pick team picking in the top five, so it'll be a low first-round draft picks because with Russ and this team, they're going to be a playoff Super Bowl contender. I think it's a good get. I do, and Jamal Adams is a hell of a player. It's going to cost you, but it's a hell of a player. For the Jets, they don't have many good players. They're not giving Sam Darnold much, you know, much help, but it does give them, and they'll get a chance to at least start to build something or put a package together to move up into the top five a second, or who knows, to get more than one player. So I think it works for both. But on the surface, I thought, I don't know. But Jamal Adams is a hell of a player. It's all going to come down to how that defense uses him.
Yeah, and really what it looks like, it's a win-win for both teams because people were critical of Pittsburgh last year for trading up and getting Mika Fitzpatrick, giving up a number one. But they realize it's like, hey, there's no number one we're going to get in that next year's draft. It's going to be good as Mika Fitzpatrick. And, you know, he's among the top 35 players according to the NFL Network. And then you look at, Jamal Adams. You know, it's like, okay, you got two things going wrong in the draft in a sense that, one, you don't know how the draft's going to be next year. At the moment, you only have eight conferences in the FCS that's even considering playing this year, so you're going to have bad drafts, particularly if you're going to be drafting in the high 20s or in the 20s. It's just not going to work, and that may carry over for the next year. To me, win-win for both teams.
After seeing the struggles baseball has had with outbreaks, what is your confidence level in pro sports happening outside of a bubble atmosphere?
Not real high, and I'm the opposite of a fearmonger. I had COVID-19 for 21 days, and every symptom, I didn't have to go to the hospital, and I had every symptom, but I didn't throw up. So I went through, and I'm basically barely getting taste and smell back now. I mean, I got it back, but it's not where it needs to be. So I understand that, and it affects people differently. It just does. I don't have a lot of confidence, so I'm not a fearmonger. I want to play. And if we can do it right and proper protocol, and it all comes down to if we just started this thing with common sense and respect for each other, it probably wouldn't be as in-depth as it is for all of us. It just if you try to do the right thing. That being said, my confidence doesn't sit at a high level because I've seen what it does to even teams that are trying to. You get a day off and a rain delay, and look what happens to the Miami Marlins. A lot of the accountability is going to fall on the player. Let's just speak to football for that sake. I mean, of when you go home, you know, on your Tuesday off day, are you going to be hanging around five other people in a restaurant or bar? Now, I get it. If you social distance, wear a mask, you got to go out. You got to live. You can't stop living. But if you want your season, you want to get paid, and you want to finish it, the accountability, you've got to take some accountability. You just absolutely have to. So I don't have great confidence. I have really good confidence that it's going to start. I don't have great confidence it's going to finish. And I'm not even so sure that baseball is going to finish either. I hope it does. I'm an optimist, but I'm also a realist. And a lot of that accountability will fall on 25-year-old and 30-year-old football and baseball players. Basketball's done it right, but it's impossible to have a bubble in football. So I hope it finishes, but I think they're in real danger because I'm not sure that they're going to be able to stop the spread. The key is, how are you going to live with it and keep your teams going, even if it hits your team?
Yeah, and it's still going to be a matter that, it's up to the players more than anything else. I mean, being in the team facility, I mean, that's going to be clean. Hotel's going to be available. Home is going to be where the problem is. And we saw that with Andrew Whitworth. I mean, here he was not doing anything wrong. One of his kids went out, had lunch with somebody and brought back the virus, and 10 members of the family got sick. But in the end, it's up to the players to make sure that they can either quarantine themselves and not bring anything back to the team.
Camp opens this week, so which quarterback battle are you most intrigued by?
Well, I think two battles that stick out to me are going to be, if you consider it, I think Cam Newton's going to win the job, but I'm intrigued with Jarrett Stidham and what he brings and how long Bill held off to get Cam. But you got Cam for a reasonable price. If this is the Cam Newton that's got even about 85% of his MVP year, and he'll be angry and ready to play. I fully believe that. Now, they don't have a lot of great players, so he's going to have to step up his game, and with these guys opting out. But I'm anxious to see where Cam is and where his head is after coming out of this and what that chip on his shoulder looks like. But I'm also anxious to see how Stidham does now that he's outside the Brady umbrella and he gets a chance to compete. But I think Cam wins it. The other one, I think we got to take is the Washington one. I don't know, you know, what's going to go on with the injury to Alex Smith. I mean, what an unbelievable comeback. But with Haskins as a first-round guy, with Kyle Allen, who's coming from a system where he should have an advantage because he knows the verbiage. You know, Scott Turner, North Turner's son, will be coaching him, and I like that. So I don't think there's going to be a whole – there's not going to be a competition in Cincinnati. There's no competition for the most part in a lot of places. But where it is, that right there – one of those two, because we got an MVP and we've got a first round pick. And if it doesn't happen for the first round pick this year, and they're 2-14, heck, they may be in the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes in Washington next year. So in Washington and in New England, and Washington's far from a playoff team, but those are the two cities I would imagine where the biggest quarterback competition looms.
Yeah, I'm still, I mean, I know this, I know who's going to win initially, but I think how Nick Foles does in repicking up the system that
That's
he knows.
The third. Yep.
Yeah, going in,
yep.
Seeing how he does, because you know Mitch Trubisky is going to eventually lose his job. There's no open competition with Derek Carr right now, but at some point, Marcus Mariota, and then you have the quarterbacks drafted in the first round with the exception of Joe Burrow, but in the end, I think that it's going to be a pretty interesting battle to see now that we're going to have battles, but we're not going to see it until August 17th when practice starts with pads.
Fourth down, Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch now both under contract for the next five seasons, or at least the next five seasons. Which team is more likely to rule the NFC West over that time, the 49ers or the Seahawks?
I think the Seahawks, I mean the 49ers overall team right now, you know, the best player in the division is right there in Seattle. And matter of fact, you have a couple of them, and Jamal Adams becomes one of them. But Russ Wilson's the best player in the division, if not one of the three or four best players in the league. So whenever you have that guy in this league, meaning that type of player, it's look at the AFC West. Patrick, you take Mahomes out of there, boy, does that make things a little bit closer. They got the best players, so they're going to be the favorite unless something crazy happens. But with Russ Wilson, they always give you the chance. But Jimmy Garoppolo, I don't know why this narrative across the country with media and fans think the guy's a hack. The guy in his first full year starting, he was a big reason why, and you look at his numbers, big reason why they were in the Super Bowl. Now, he's got to play better in the last quarter and a half, but imagine the narrative if he just completes 8 of 11 or so instead of 3 of 11 late in the game and Kyle Shanahan calls a better game. We're looking at Jimmy Garoppolo and saying, damn, is he moving towards the top 10? He outplayed Mahomes. So I'm going to go right now with looking at their roster, the youth, the Bosa, the front seven, the receivers, the way they drafted, the fact that they're together, and Pete's as good a coach as we have outside of Belichick in this league. I'm going to give a slight advantage to the 49ers. While the quarterback in Seattle's better, Jimmy's a good player. I think the rest of the roster, for the most part, as an overall whole, is better in San Francisco right now. I think they're tied at the hip with Kyle and John Lynch. John, I'm going to go with San Francisco slightly, and I'm going to tell you, although they're not going to be in the conversation the next year or two, but while Kyler Murray is quarterback in Arizona, if they draft right and get some veterans, they are not going to go away, and in 3 or 4 years, Kyler Murray is going to be one of the top 15 players in the league.
Yeah, I think it's going to be back and forth between Seattle and San Francisco with an advantage maybe going to Seattle just because, you know, next year with $175 million cap, San Francisco has 29 free agents. You know, it's three starting, their best three cornerbacks, George Kittle, and they're already over the cap at 175, where Seattle has more room and less guys to re-sign. So I think it's going to go back and forth. I think edge goes in the next, I mean, I think it's pretty close between San Fran and Seattle, but I think in the future it's going to go kind of back and forth because you go in three-year cycles, and with the cap the way it is, until it opens up, we'll see. And of course, it's always great to see and talk to Sean Salisbury with Four Downs.
Appreciate you, Johnny. Thanks. We'll do it again next week. Should be a fun run in the NFC West for
okay,
a while.
I'll talk to you on Friday.
Okay.
Okay, sounds good. And you can listen to the show via the 710 Sports app powered by the Dubin Law Group. Coming up next, the report card. We get the grades out.
It's time for the report card with the professor.
In the report card we get out each day, we look at the good, the bad, the ugly, the smart, the stupid, what people say, what people do. We take the stories, the anecdotes, we take the social media comments, and we also take the voices, and we attach a grade to it. And giving us the report card is Curtis Rogers. Curtis, what do we have?
John, let's get started. Well, all offseason, we've been asking the question, where's Jadeveon Clowney going to sign? And I imagine a lot of people are just kind of tired of waiting around for Jadeveon Clowney to make his decision. You can add Mike Vrabel, Tennessee Titans head coach, to that list. Here was his answer to getting asked about Jadeveon Clowney again yesterday.
Mike, I just wanted to touch base one more time on the ever-popular Clowney front. I think earlier this offseason you said that you hadn't talked to him during this whole period. Wonder if that's changed at all, and if it hadn't, would you consider that given your past relationship with him and the success he had under you?
John, right now JD is not under contract with the Tennessee Titans. That's all I can tell you guys. He's a free agent, one that we've had contact with, but he's not under contract with the Tennessee Titans.
That sounds like somebody who's getting fed up of answering questions about Jadeveon Clowney, a guy who isn't even on his team. John, how are we grading Mike Vrabel? Just kind of having enough of that.
I'll give it a B because it's like I'm not as tired on the Clowney front because he does have a chance, I guess, to come back, and I liked him a lot. It's like the Antonio Brown. I get so tired of talking about Antonio Brown. That one just drives me crazy. So I'm going to give him a B because I'm as frustrated with the Antonio Brown conversations as he is on the Clowney front.
Yeah, I'll give Mike Vrabel I'll give him a B-plus on this one because I think we're all just so ready for Jadeveon Clowney to sign. And I'm betting there are people that don't even care if it's with Seattle. They just want this to be over with so that the elephant in the room is no longer there. Just sign with somebody, Jadeveon. If it's Seattle, it's Seattle. But if it's not, who knows what where he's going to end up.
And I still think with the virus and everything else, it wouldn't surprise me, you know, with the microfracture and everything else. He just waits till August, late August.
Yeah, could very well happen. John, also on the report card today, Aaron Rodgers was on a podcast with NFL Network's Kyle Brandt, and Rodgers was asked about how his night went the night the Packers drafted quarterback Jordan Love in the first round. And Aaron, he said that the alcohol was flowing.
When they traded up, I was definitely a little perked up a little bit. And then I got a text because everything's so delayed. I got a text from my agent, marketing agent who I love. And he said, he just texted quarterback. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay. So I love scotch, but I've been drinking some sipping tequila lately as well.
Right.
And once I got that text, I went to the pantry. I poured myself, about four fingers. And I knew it was going to be one of those nights where the people are going to start calling and there's going to be, hey, you know, everything fine, you okay? I'm like, yeah, fine. Like, you know, I wasn't elated by the pick, you know, especially being one game away from the Super Bowl and feeling like we're a couple players away. But at the same time, I understand it's a business.
Aaron Rodgers said he got the tequila out. John poured himself four fingers, and that was the rest of his night. How are we grading Aaron Rodgers, taking the news that the Packers have their quarterback in the future?
Give him a B because, again, he's being honest. I mean, it's like he all of a sudden realized I wanted to be a Packer for life, wanted to play at least four more years, and now he knows he's going to be shortened into two. And so I'll give him a B because, you know, he tried to address something that he knows he's not liking.
Yeah, I'll give him a B. I don't blame him for feeling the way he does about his situation with the Packers because, I mean, he's given everything he has to that organization over the last, 15 years or so, and that's how they repay him. But as it is,
after a 13-3 year, he was in the championship game.
Exactly. They were a really good team a year ago. It's not like they need to break it down and hit the reset button here anytime soon. I mean, the Packers are still a really good team heading into next year. I would imagine they're the NFC North favorites. And, I mean, yeah, Aaron Rodgers is not what he was 5 or 6 years ago, but he's still a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. And, I mean, he's not too shabby throwing the pigskin. And then finally, John, on the report card, last night we finally saw the Astros get some comeuppance. This time courtesy of the L.A. Dodgers, the team that they beat in that 2017 World Series, that controversial one where the Astros may or may not have been stealing signs during that one. That Game 7, Yu Darvish may or may not have been tipping his pitches, and the Astros knew about it. A lot of sketchy stuff with that. Last night, Joe Kelly goes up and in on Alex Bregman and then has words with Carlos Correa, two guys who are heavily implicated in Major League Baseball's investigation of the Astros. So how are we grading Dodgers pitcher Joe Kelly being the one to break the ice and go up and in on the Astros?
I'll give it a C because I still think that you risk hurting your team by getting a suspension if you do something like that. But I give him credit just from the standpoint that, okay, let's get this all done here and move on. So, I'll give it a C, kind of right down the middle.
I'll give the Astros a B-plus because I'll give the Dodgers a B-plus because they have been sitting on this. They have been waiting and waiting and waiting for years to get some revenge on the Astros. And, yeah, it may have looked childish last night, the way Joe Kelly sort of paraded around after the bench is cleared. But, hey, sometimes you got to get ugly in order to get even. And I hope that the Dodgers feel as though they've gotten even for this. Probably not, because they lost a World Series title in a heartbreaking fashion. But maybe, just maybe, they were able to sleep a little easier last night. That is it for today's report card, Professor.
Okay, and be sure to check out the Professor's Notes at 710sports.com. The Professor's Notes brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5. Coming up next, we are going to take your text questions on the Busy Hard Seltzer text line, 710-710, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Why do you listen to 710 ESPN Seattle? Because that's where Seattle sports news happens first.
3 weeks ago, Jake Heath said,
I actually had a conversation with a friend of mine who works in a front office on the other side of the country. He actually said, so your Seahawks are really into Jamal Adams.
Hey, Jake, if you have any other secrets about what the Seahawks are going to do, you should definitely tell me.
I very strongly believe that they're going to make another run at Jadeveon Clowney.
First, the Seahawks, Mariners, and everything Seattle sports. 710 ESPN Seattle.
Well, sports fans, we finally made it. July marks the long-anticipated return of professional baseball, basketball, soccer, and then football started yesterday. Now, if you're anything like me and been bottled up inside the house for the last couple months, you are ready to celebrate the return of sports. My friends at Infinity Tacoma at Fife want to celebrate with you. They've extended their 0% interest for 72 months offer on any new Infinity. 0% interest for 72 months is a savings of up to $5,000 and the difference of buying new instead of used. Or lease the brand new 2020 Q50 all-wheel drive for only $369 per month plus tax and $4,230 total down. No security deposit required, 10,000 miles per year, 39-month lease with approval of credit. The VIN number is LM257112. Offer ends July 31st. Infinity of Tacoma at Fife, delivering the luxury you deserve. That's why I'm proud to say they're the only dealership endorsed by the Professor.
You're listening to the Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Time to go into Busy Hard Seltzer's text line and take your text questions at 710-710. So, Curtis, what do we have?
John from the 253, they want to know, what is Seattle's current cap number with all the rookie signings and the Jamal Adams trade in the books?
Don't have all the rookies yet because they just got them done yesterday. So they're at 17 mil. I guess they're probably down to about maybe 13 or so, because I knew that they already had three draft choices signed. So they're about 17 at the moment. 17 going down to 13.
Okay. 509 wants to know, John, if this is Aaron Rodgers' final season in Green Bay, what do you think of him going to Dallas?
They can't afford him. I mean, because he's still going to want $30 million, and they left themselves by not getting a deal done with Dak Prescott, an impossible situation, and they probably didn't anticipate that they were going to have all the different stuff going on with the $175 million cap. I mean, at $198, they were going to be challenged, because if you do 37-7 on Dak Prescott, what you're seeing is that it's just not going to fit. So I think it's going to be difficult. But again, Mike McCarthy's there. Do you think he's going to go? I mean, he wanted Mike McCarthy out. Do you think he's going to go to the coach that he didn't like at the end? I don't think so.
Yeah, that seems like a bad pairing. From the 360, they want to know, what is your new record prediction for the Seahawks after adding Jamal Adams?
I take it now to 11. I think that that was a significant move. And if they were 10 before, I think this puts them at 11. And against San Francisco, I can still see a little bit of a drop-off at 11. So I think that the balance is pretty even. I still give a slight edge in talent to San Francisco. But, one or two injuries, one or two opt-outs, that can change things.
From the 425, they want to know, John, who do you think will be unveiled as the number one player on the top 100 NFL list?
I think it's going to be Patrick Mahomes. I mean, I think that Russell Wilson has a good chance to be number two, and the question is going to be, where do Aaron Donald and Stephon Gilmore rank? Because the 10 that we know that are up right now are going to be Aaron Donald, Stephon Gilmore, Derrick Henry, DeAndre Hopkins, Lamar Jackson, George Kittle, Patrick Mahomes, Christian McCaffrey, Michael Thomas, and Russell Wilson. So it's, I think, 1-2, probably Mahomes over Wilson.
360 wants to know, John, if Chris Carson and Rashad Penny are healthy early on in the season, could Seattle use Carlos Hyde as a trade chip?
Doubt it. I mean, because right now it depends on what teams are looking for running backs, and there aren't many teams looking for running backs. Injuries could play into it, but yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, certainly with only five draft choices next year, they're going to be looking to try to add some picks. But you know, Rashad Penny, I can't see envision playing in the top first six games. You know, if the season gets delayed, which I doubt, you know, then that gives him more time to be able to come back. But no, I think he's going to start on PUP and be available for the seventh game.
360 wants to know, what percentage chance do you give Quentin Dunbar of suiting up for Seattle in 2020?
I think that, I mean, because they can't hold him out all year. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's like, okay, so he has the charge. I mean, there's been no grand jury or anything like that. There's been no trial, and because that's the Players Association argument. It's like, okay, so he does have the charge, but you know, he's at least a year and a half to 2 years away from getting his day in court, and so you're going to keep him out and put him in purgatory. So I don't know how long it's going to go, but at some point he's going to be cleared. And my read is the Seahawks are supporting him, you know, in the circumstance, and they want him, and so they can wait this out. I mean, he may have to serve some time, but I don't know how long.
415 wants to know, John, do you think Russell Wilson will ever get an MVP vote or the award altogether?
See, that's the thing. It's like, you have to understand, it's not a matter of the vote. There's only one vote per year. And so if like a Patrick Mahomes has great stats and takes a team to 12, 13 games, if Lamar Jackson takes a team to 14 wins, then they're going to beat Russell Wilson out. The only reason if you look at the, what is it now, 8 years that Russell's been here, there's only been 8 votes for quarterback or for MVP. There's only been 8 votes. The fact that he didn't get one is just, it's irrelevant.
From the 360, they want to know, John, what are the odds KJ Wright plays his entire career with the Seahawks?
I think it depends. I don't know where he stands as far as, you know, the future years. I mean, this is very well going to be his last year here. I do think they're going to stick by him. I still think that he's going to, you know, be able to play for him this year. But you know, I still wonder about you know, where it's going to go ultimately. But in the end, I think that you know, if he doesn't want to play next year, and he very well might, because he's now in his 30s and he's had, you know, knee issues, nothing serious, but you know, some stuff like that. But I hope it's one where they can continue it, because it's great to see a great guy like that stay with the team his entire career.
Yeah, that'd be really cool if KJ were able to be a career Seahawk. That mm-hmm. that would be an incredible honor. And I think he's definitely going to have a spot in the Ring of Honor one day, just because of his longevity and being part of the best defense in team history. Really, really good stuff from KJ. From the 509, they want to know, which team will have the biggest drop from their success in 2019?
Green Bay. Because, you know, I still look at them. You know, I still wonder about their defense. They didn't upgrade the wide receiver position. And so I think that the Green Bay Packers are going to be the team that's going to have one of the bigger drops. Now, not to a point where they're not going to make the playoffs, but I think they're going to have a big drop.
Yeah, they use their first two picks on a quarterback and a running back when they already have Aaron Rodgers and Aaron Jones. Made no sense, but
don't get it.
Whatever. Let's see here. From the 425, they want to know, how much longer do you think Pete Carroll has as Seattle's head coach?
I think he's good for one more contract. I mean, I think that one more 3-year contract. So I think he's good for at least 4 years.
This one comes from the 425. They want to know, if Clowney does sign with Seattle, could KJ Wright be moved or cut?
That very well could happen, because again, if Clowney's going to eat up too much cap room on a 1-year deal, that could cost KJ the chance to stay with the team. So, and I think they want to keep him with the team. So it would be a tough decision, but they would need the cap room for him.
The 360 wants to know, John, which pass rusher will have the better chance of living up to his mega deal, Joey Bosa or Myles Garrett?
I think they're both going to be fine, you know, because they're that good. And again, you know, I know it's $27 million right now for Bosa, but don't jump too far here, because again, we watched the Patrick Mahomes deal at 45, and it was really 39.8 because of the way it's structured. And so, you know, he went for the average. I think also too, he did it to help the team out. So just stay tuned on that one. But I think they're both really good.
Yeah, and both young, too. They're going to be around for a while, barring any kind of injury setback. Hopefully that doesn't happen. John, this one from the 206. They want to know, if you had to pick right now, who do you think is winning the Bears' starting quarterback job?
It'll be Mitch Trubisky to start, and then at some point, just like we saw last year with Marcus Mariota, then Nick Foles are going to be there. Although, I guess the coaches' staff started talking today on a Zoom press conference and said it's going to be completely open, which surprises me a little bit, but hey, completely open, maybe completely open.
From the 206, they want to know, over or under 12 starts for Ben Roethlisberger in 2020?
Over. I think he's going to be healthy and fine. I don't really see any problem there, so I think that he's going to be in good, good shape.
That will do it for today's text questions.
Okay, and of course, coming up next is our Daily Dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Time for the Daily Dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby. And so baseball, despite the mess that's known as the Miami Marlins, had another big night last night with Joe Kelly, you know, getting into it and trying to take revenge for the World Series in 2017 for the Astros spying, and got into it. And we had a bench-clearing brawl and balls thrown at key members of the Astros. We saw that to open the season. Now we see it again.
Well, we saw it in the last preseason game, you mean. We didn't see it in the Mariners series, so that it didn't happen there. But, yes, the Dodgers with axe to grind, Joe Kelly endearing himself to his new teammates, and I imagine a pretty popular guy everywhere but Houston today in baseball.
No doubt about it, because, again, so many people were against the Astros, and, understandably. And, of course, you know, they find out that Justin Verlander is now hurt. I think a lot of people were probably, even though they love Verlander, the person and the player, but they don't like the Astros. I mean, how, in the last several years, where do you think the Astros relate as far as unpopular teams?
Well, I mean, it didn't exist until the cheating thing came out. I mean, they were not particularly unpopular at all. I mean, in fact, they were probably a pretty likable bunch with Altuve and a couple of interesting characters, and the cheating thing changed all that 100%, and it gave everyone a different perspective on them. And what will be interesting to see is the commissioner, who's got a lot on his plate right now, had made it a point of saying that they won't stand for headhunting and whatnot, and I don't know what else you would call that yesterday. So I'm curious to see if there'll be any punishment passed down today.
Yeah, and of course, that's the thing that, Rob Manfred is really getting exposed for not being a very good commissioner. I mean, here, for example, he gives the teams the ability to decide if they want to play. And, you go to the Miami Marlins shortstop, and he, with three positive tests, he says, oh, we got to keep going and playing. And look at the damage that's done there. Now, you have the opening series where you have balls thrown at Astros, I mean, three times. And now you have this one, and, no flicker of any penalties. It's like, what is this guy doing?
Well, we'll see. I mean, I think that there may be something that comes down. Although, on the other hand, this was inevitable. I mean, there was no question that this was going to happen. And the Dodgers are, and I'm not criticizing the Mariners on this. They made their decision. The Dodgers, of course, lost the World Series to the Astros when this was going on. So they had a somewhat different perspective on it. I imagine Manfred will do something before the day is done. I'd be surprised if he didn't. I don't know how dramatic it'll be, but. I don't think they want him headhunting, and it was quite the interesting scene, I'll say that much.
Oh, it really was. I mean, it was vicious. I mean, that's but again, I guess, it's kind of like baseball had gotten away from that, and now it's like it does add an exciting element to the game.
Yes and no. I mean, I like it. I think throwing at guys' heads is one thing, and that's something that baseball's lost its taste for good reason. But look, the Astros made their bed, so I'm not surprised that they're being forced by some teams to lay in it. And I don't imagine this is going to be it. There are going to be other instances like this. And in the meantime, you talk about the Marlins thing, and they had another player test positive today, so they're up to 17. In that whole thing, and so far no one else has gotten it, and baseball's keeping a wary eye on all of that, but it did feel a little bit more like normal to see
jabbering, to see stuff that happens in a baseball game and not be obsessing about the strange-looking crowd and the strange-sounding noise that's being pumped in.
No doubt, but that is a fascinating thing, and of course, it adds to the game of baseball. I tell you what, in all my years of covering the NFL, that was the strangest reporting day that I could ever imagine. Now, obviously, we know with the virus, it was going to cause that. I mean, you had the 29 players that got the positive test so far, and we're going to get many, many more as time goes on. But with the opt-outs, 29 opt-outs, and some in very big categories. I mean, for example, you have six members of the New England Patriots, including Pro Bowler Dante Hightower, opting out. Four starters in that group. You have, of course, the Vikings, because they had a day of reckoning with the cap, had to let five defensive starters go, and they paid $9 million to get Michael Pierce out of Baltimore, $9 million a year, and he opted out. You had very little added for wide receivers for Aaron Rodgers, and a veteran in Devin Funchess, he opted out. It was kind of an amazing day with the 29 guys that opted out.
Well, like you said, I mean, it's everything – kind of going, well, not everything, but most things going forward is unprecedented. And even saying that phrase, opted out, I mean, when would you think you'd be even uttering that phrase a couple of months ago involving NFL players? And there may still be some more to come. It wouldn't be surprising as training camps get going. But, it's just it's a sign of the times we're in, I suppose.
No doubt, and that's it can do some damage to some teams without question, because I mean, some may not have anticipated it, and some may not anticipate, because everybody has until Tuesday, the players, to come back. And of course, it's not like they could come back this year if they opt out on August the 4th, and then you have some players on the street electing to opt out. I mean, Larry Warford is the best guard on the street, let go by New Orleans, three-time Pro Bowler. He's not going to play, and you can see the pattern that was there. There was two ways that this was going. You have defensive tackles and offensive linemen, big guys who are at risk. Some of those guys may have sleep apnea, and if that's the case, they were at risk and they opted to not risk their bodies and their families. And then you have the guys, certainly like Patrick Chung and others who have families and kids, maybe kids that were just born, and they didn't. Like the one that was destroying for Philadelphia was Marquise, getting Marquise Goodwin, but you can perfectly well understand it because, his wife has had two miscarriages over the last couple of years, and it's affected everybody. And so I think that even though, he was a vital thing to add to the speed of the Eagles' bad receiving core, now he's going to opt out, but you can understand it.
You can, and it's going to be very interesting to see. And the guy to watch, obviously, in all of this is Belichick and how the Patriots handle it. They took the biggest hit so far, and I emphasize so far. But I wonder how much people were able to anticipate it, John. It's just everything is just so different and so concerning that I mean, I imagine some teams were caught by surprise. I can't imagine that wasn't the case with some guys. Again, I mean, we're in totally uncharted waters here as training camps begin, and then we're going to see what happens with training camps. I mean, there are all kinds of things that the more time you have, the more things can change, and not being in a bubble. I mean, I know it's a very difficult concept for the NFL to do with all the players they have. But we're seeing the impact of not having one in baseball. That may impact the NFL as they go through their training camp. So it's going to be very interesting, compelling stuff coming up, and hopefully more good than bad.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like it's going to be a training camp unlike any other, in the sense that it's really not like a training camp. I mean, what it is for the first 3 weeks, it's testing for the virus, seeing if you can at least pass a couple positive or negative tests, and then you get conditioning now until August 17th. I mean, all it's going to be is running. Yeah, you can have some of like the early OTA type stuff as far as lining up, but you're not going to be able to have any contact or anything else. But it's going to be really August 17th is really, even though it's the unofficial start of camp, that's when camp really gets started, because that's when you can wear the pads.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And who can guess right now what the ramifications will be for the season of guys, how comfortable a guy's going to be in contact and things like that. It's just, A lot of X factors, and a lot of, I really feel for the players, a lot that they have to have on their mind, a lot they have on their plates, a lot to worry about as that day approaches.
No doubt about it. And, of course, that's our daily dose of the Groz, which is always great. And, of course, we will do it again tomorrow. David, thank you. Have a good day.
John, sounds good. You have a good one yourself.
Okay, so stay tuned. We're still waiting for stuff on college football as far as, you know, not definitive words, but where they're leaning, because you've got, you know, the Power Five conferences trying to at least decide, you know, if they're going to play, and they're pushing to play. You only have three other conferences in the FCS that are still under consideration, and so we'll see where that goes. But, of course, we'll be back tomorrow to go over all of it. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.